Blog Talk Radio.
This is Haunted America with your host, Josh Mantello and Al Shepard on Blog Talk Radio. To discuss today's topics, call 646-716-5896.
Quiet, don't want to hear you.
And now, Haunted America with Josh Mantello and Al Shepard.
Once again, my name's Al Shepard. I'm joined by Josh Mantello. Hello, Josh.
Hello. I made it right on time this week.
I was wondering.
Oh, I've been having serious internet connectivity problems the last hour or so. I've been messing around with that.
Yeah, when we were chatting earlier, you dropped right out on me a couple times, so... Anyways, this week we are going to discuss the scientific aspects of ghost investigations, and we'll be joined by Michael Baker, director of the paranormal documentary 14 Degrees, who also has a little special surprise, I guess. So what do you want to start with?
Well, where to start this week? Well, I just wanted to start right out with those EVP you were telling me about your wife, Carl. I wouldn't mind giving that a listening to.
All right, yeah. Those of you who were listening to last week's show, I know I said that I kicked the wife out of the house there. We just got two new voice recorders, so she grabbed one, went up to the cemetery by her parents' grave and just kind of did a little EVP work while she was up there, and she brought it back. We got listening, and we actually caught something here. Now, I clipped this because it was so faint, her voice was so loud, it'd drive you right out of the seat. So this is actually in between questions, and this is what we heard.
Can anyone give me a sign that you're here?
I don't know if you could hear that well or not. I had it up to 100% here. Let me go to 400% and try it again, see if that makes it any louder.
Can anyone give me a sign that you're here?
So what's that sound like to you, Josh?
At first I thought I was hearing an ambulance going by. It almost sounds like some sort of scream off in the background. I don't know. Is that what I was supposed to be listening for? Was that yell or scream almost?
Yeah, she's in the very back of the cemetery. There's absolutely no one around. It's quite a ways from the road, and you could hear cars going by quite clearly on the rest of the tape, but that was something that could not be explained. The first part, I thought maybe it was a bird, but then when you listen to the last part of it, and she says, "I've had enough colicky babies before," she says, "I know what that sounds like," and that sounds like a colicky baby.
Really? Well, I haven't heard one, but I'm sure it does sound like something crying or screaming off in the background there, that's for sure.
Here, let me try it one more time, just maybe you can get a better idea of it now that you know what I'm thinking.
Can anyone give me a sign that you're here?
Absolutely.
So anyway, that's what...
You can definitely hear something. Yeah, it does kind of have a cry sound to it. That, you know, it can almost make out sound like a baby.
So we're, when we get a chance, we're going to go back up there and just look around different headstones. And I'm willing to bet we're going to find one of an infant somewhere that's not too far away.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised in the least if you did.
But
one thing. Anyway,
that's.
That kind of brings up a good point about EVPs. Almost in the line of the subject for the night, but it's kind of in that realm. Kind of brings up the power of suggestion. A lot of times, and this isn't just because it's all EVPs are that way. EVPs are amazing like that, where a lot of times you need somebody to almost tell you what they think it is until you really hear it. I've had so many EVPs where some people say, "Oh, that says this and this says that," and then when you actually sit down and they say, "Well, that's what it was," and then when they tell you what they think they hear, it kind of pops out at you.
Yeah, you wonder how much is the power of suggestion. I've noticed that a lot playing clips from people using Frank's box. And, oh, it said this, oh, it said that. And I've listened and listened and listened. I said, I don't hear a damn thing, you know. But this one, I played it and I amplified it and everything else. And when you know, it definitely to me sounds like a baby crying. And she said there was no one anywhere around, and this cemetery is a big cemetery. So when you're at the very back of it where her parents are buried, you're a good quarter mile from the road, and there's no sidewalks because it's on the outskirts of town. So it's not like anybody was walking by with a baby stroller or anything like that. They don't walk that far out of town. So there's no logical explanation I could put on it.
No, you're absolutely right, Al. You know, short of the, like you said, a baby going by and or something along those lines, it's kind of hard to say, you know, what could have put that on there. And, you know, I'll probably use that
and
to
the fact that the fact that she was listening, you know, she was doing an EVP session, so she was sitting there listening for anything, and she said there's no way she actually heard that with her ears either.
Right, yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, I mean, it'll kind of segue in a little bit into what we wanted to talk about tonight. Tonight, early evening. We were kind of delve into the scientific realm of the paranormal and the scientific aspects of the investigations. And EVP is obviously has its own naysayers and believers, but it in itself has a scientific theory and method behind it that, when we investigate. And, you know, a lot of the skeptics, you know, when we talk about science, we're going to have to talk about skeptics because, you know, we are, like I've said in our past 2 weeks, that we are a quasi-science in itself, so we definitely have our fair share of naysayers who are saying you're doing the scientific community a disjustice, well, and just as many as we probably have to say we're doing it justice. But I think what's happening there and what people are saying a EVP is first, you know, the EVPs have been around as long as recording devices have been around. A lot of people are doing it more often now when the recorders are more readily available. Everybody can go to Walmart and pick up digital recorders. And now they're getting more widely spread around because now with the digital recorders, we're able to get them onto our computer easily and edit them more easily and put them out across the internet. You know, but as long as, even from back to the old reel-to-reels, people were getting ghostly voices and disembodied voices that they didn't hear at the time of the recording coming over their what they were trying to record. So EVP has been around a while, and this isn't a new piece of equipment or a new device that we've used.
And I think it's one of the easiest things for anyone to use too. If anyone wants to, try their hand at a little bit of investigating, this, you know, a voice recorder is probably the cheapest thing you can pick up and the easiest thing that everybody already knows how to use. So. And like I've been saying all along, is that the more people you get involved in this investigating, the quicker you're going to come to that concrete piece of evidence that we're all searching for to legitimize everything, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, you're hitting that right, the nail right on the head with that. And I really feel that, you know, there is something going on there, and to kind of say what they're, well, I'll give you kind of both sides here. I'll jump right into our scientific talk here, I guess. The two sides of it are, basically, is you have your recorder, and that is your means of your communication, your medium, I suppose, if you want to call it. And that medium is an electronic device. To go into a little bit more, we'll probably get in later, and spirits, and one of the main scientific theories as to what paranormal activity is and what spirit activity might actually be is disembodied energy of the soul, disembodied energy of the human body that hasn't moved on in its wayward of sorts, I guess you could say. And so it being electrical and energy in its own essence, it has the ability to interact and manipulate other things of electronical and electric device. So even your first reel-to-reel tape recorders used, you know, magnetic imprints onto the tape and along those lines. And now we're using it as a small handheld digital devices. So what they're saying is the electrical energy of the spirit is getting into the device, and they're using that to be able to manipulate either the tape or the audio recording chips in the digital recorders to actually project their voice and what they're trying to say. There are many theories, you know, ghosts and spirits have to be able to manifest their energy, draw out of the surrounding atmosphere. And we'll get into some of that later. So they may not have a whole lot of energy to work with, and hence we're not getting sentence-long conversations back and forth with these spirits. You're getting small EVPs, 2, 3, you know, five-letter or five-word sentences at the very most out of these spirits. So that's your paranormal believer side. The skeptics in the scientific community and the people who are debunking your EVPs are saying that it's stray radio signals and stray radio waves that are actually imprinting in on your electrical devices. There's two ways to really think about that, I suppose. It is possible. I really don't adopt to that a whole lot. I have a real hard time believing that when we're asking specific questions relevant to a haunting, that we're getting answers that are relevant to our questions. Stray radio signals are going to be your cabs, your police cars, ambulances, fire trucks, something going by transmitting, a neighbor on a ham or a CB. This, you know, what they're going to be saying isn't going to really be too relevant coming back to the questions you're asking, if you know what I mean, and that aspect.
You're always going to have that skeptic, though, saying that it is possible for coincidence or whatever, that the syllables happen to line up just right at the right time, you know, and I don't know how you're ever going to get away from that. But that's one reason why I liked Sarah Estep's idea of using the background noise of the aircraft band as opposed to like AM or FM radio and the Frank's box. You know, I'd like to see maybe a Frank's box where it's scanning aircraft band or something like that, where you don't, you know, where it's more of a technical type jargon and not normal conversation like you'd get on AM or FM radio. So then you're a lot less apt to get a coincidental answer to your question. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I do understand that, yeah. It's, and you're right. And yeah, I got, the way I look at it is, you know, there's, how many times have we heard the EVPs of a small child? You know, a small child isn't probably operating the radio. How many times have you heard the EVPs that answer the question that you're asking? I have some that where I said, how many people are in the room? And it answered me. Do you have anything to say? And it says, yes, goodbye. All sorts of things along those lines. And, you know, it's amazing that, you know, you have that. It sounds like solid evidence. It sounds like solid proof, yet they're not, you know, I think EVP is probably your most compelling and your most hardest evidence to debunk out there, just because it's not a car going by, it's not your police car going by, 10-4, I'm en route to this location, I have the person under arrest, it's, are you here with us tonight, what's your name, my name is so-and-so, and that's the name of the ghost, you know, that's the name of the person who used to live there.
Yeah, one part of me says yes, that could be the thing that produces the most compelling evidence, but yet at the same time, like I said, if you're using AM and FM frequencies or something like that as background, you know, then it also has the potential to be shot down the quickest too, especially when they're asking questions that simply require a yes and no answer.
True.
Then, you know, how many times a day does a DJ on the radio say yes, you know, and your Frank's box is flipping through all these frequencies and you're liable to get a yes or a no, you know. So that's what aggravates me. I watch these shows on TV and these people are doing these, what the heck was I watching the other night? There was something, it was a video I was watching of a paranormal group out west. I think it was on YouTube. And they're doing an EVP session, and he just kept for like 20 minutes straight, give me a sign, do this, do that. Was that you? You know, every time the spirit would give him a sign, he'd keep repeating the same questions. Was that you? Was that you? Well, give me another sign. And it's like, they've already told you they're there. Now ask something where you're going to get something of substance, you know? And it was driving me nuts. I was jumping up and down watching this stupid thing. Wanted to slap him across the head.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's something maybe you need to sit down and think about, an instruction-type course strictly on how to ask questions, you know? And, because I see a lot of them just doing that, and they'll say, are you here? Give me a sign, and they give them a sign, or they'll catch an EVP that says yes, but then they don't continue the conversation. It's like they're so happy as hell that they just got that, and they're so excited, they totally lose track of what they're doing, and they don't continue with the conversation to try to draw out more information.
Right, yeah. And I think that's the thing, is if you sit long enough and you're saying, yeah, give me a sign, and you're asking the same thing for 20 minutes, you're going to get something eventually that's going to, you know, please you. You're looking so hard that eventually anything's going to pop out at you, I suppose.
If I was a spirit, I'd be bored to death, and I'd say, the heck with them. I'm going to go talk to somebody who's more conversational.
Yeah. Well, I think to help move on here, we're going to turn in. We might as well turn our show into an EVP show, because that's what we get into every week. But it is such a fascinating.
I know. I don't know. Well, you still you sent me that clip here, so we got to play.
No, that's what
I
kind of want to get to. I was just going to say, why don't I'm going to interlude it a little bit, because I want to look at it two separate ways here. We mentioned the power of suggestion earlier, and we also, you know, kind of mentioned stray radio signals. How being a way to make EVPs happen. So this here is what we were using, is kind of a new piece of equipment, a new device that's been, people have been adapting and trying to get in. And it's a version off of a more scientific device that was used called a Frank's box. Frank's box was built by a guy named Frank, and I forgot his last name. But anyways, basically, it's supposed to be a live back-and-forth session of EVP. And with the live back-and-forth session, it's constantly scanning radio signals. While it's scanning through these radio signals, in the original Frank's box, they used a wider range of shortwave and ham frequencies, frequencies that aren't quite as used. And it does a continuous scan through. You ask your questions, and this, so this is generating your white noise. And when you ask your questions, it's supposed to come back. These newer ones that people are kind of adopting and using, they call them a hack box or a Radio Shack box. Is you actually use a Radio Shack AM/FM digital tuner to use it, and you crack it open, and there's a little couple pins you have to pull to actually get it to work, and you go from there. So this is using only AM/FM. You're obviously getting some AM. When we did this clip that we'll play in a few minutes here, we were using AM frequency, so we are getting some AM talk over from different local stations. So I know automatically anybody who's going to be a good skeptic is going to say, well, whatever you heard is the radio coming over. But this was something that's very, again, it was very relevant to what was happening at the time. We were investigating now, it was about a month ago, and we are having something happening. We're in an attic. The attic was sectioned off into two different rooms, and one room we were all standing in, and I could see something moving around in another side of the room. I go in there, that room is an extremely cold temperature drop. Something was moving around. I actually felt something push me in the back. I felt, I had some sort of spirit touch me in this room. So I leave, and I call my other investigator who's actually working the hack box. I say, why don't you go in there and try it? And you're going to hear him start to go in and say, whoa. And he's actually saying how he doesn't want to go in there. He felt the extremely cold temperature. He didn't like the way it felt. He didn't want to go in there. And then you hear somewhat of a little bit of a response. I mean, I kind of shy away from it. I don't want to get into the whole power suggestion thing right away. I'll play it once and then tell you what I thought it was, and we'll play it one more time. But this was something relevant to what, I think the way he was acting and what his reactions were to what was happening.
Yeah. I'm just looking in the chat room here. I think your father's in there, said he can't hear us, so I don't know if it's just him or if nobody can hear us. that's interesting. Anyways, we'll play this clip here and see what we get. I'll crank it up a little bit here. So.
Hey, we're going here. Dude, it's like following me. I'm really. Chicken? Did you just call me chicken?
No, yes, real life.
I took the chicken part and added it at the end a couple of times so you could hear it again, because it was a little hard to pick out all the other stuff that was going on there.
Yeah, and now when you're listening to that, too, you're going to hear the, you kind of hear a click, 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 and it sounds like you kind of phased that out a little bit. That click, click, click was the continual clicking through the radio stations. So if you play it back again in a minute, you'll hear right before he says chicken, or right before you hear him say, you called me a chicken, it was almost a whispery voice of something coming through the box now calling him a chicken, and almost response to him saying, I'm not going in there. I'm not going in there. I don't want to go in there. I don't like it. So whatever was in there, if you believe this was something manipulated through spirit, calling him a chicken, no, don't go in there.
It makes sense. That's something that's not random. It's relevant to the situation that's going on, which lends it a lot of credibility. Here, let me play it one more time.
Hey, we're going here. Dude, it's like following me. I'm really. Chicken? Did you just call me chicken?
No, yes, really.
I don't know.
Yeah, and so, and now that's in. Oh, go ahead.
I, problems with, I don't know if it's my hearing or what, I have problems with Frank's boxes. Anyway, I watched a clip with Chris Moon, and he's like, oh, they said this, and oh, they said that, and I'm like, I don't hear a damn thing. So I don't know if it's just me or what.
Yeah, it's...
I can hear the chick.
I mean, they're tough. They are, the jury's still out for me as to, what they are, you know, whether, you know, I really don't think I don't think it's probably as reliable as, your normal EVPs. I think you're opening yourself up to more criticism from skeptics by using it. Just because, you know, where their big thing is, you know, for debunking EVP is simply, well, you're picking up stray radio signals. Well, here you are using a radio to try and capture EVP or talk. So I think, you know, by adding that whole aspect into it, you're opening yourself up to a little bit more criticism from the real big non-believers. But, I mean, I don't know. I have a little bit of faith into it. That chicken was pretty close.
Yeah, I can clearly hear the first syllable. I'm having trouble with the second part, second syllable. But so let me ask you. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. There's two different camps here. One that says you need white noise to generate EVPs. The other one says they get the best when it's complete silence. So where do you fall on that side of the fence?
Oh boy, you know, it depends. I prefer to generally use no white noise. I like to just keep it out. I'm not objected to using white noise. I suppose my only problem with it is whether you're using just a plain white noise generator, or some people use like a TV or a radio to do that. And again, like I just stated, you're opening yourself up to that possibility of actually that radio or TV broadcasting out something. And also, when you're using white noise and you're listening to it for such a long period of time, you're going to actually maybe start to matrix with your ears. Matrixing being, you know, the natural tendency of the human brain to find something it recognizes and can understand in chaos, which white noise is. It's just chaotic sounds, unrecognizable things. And the brain doesn't like that, so the brain tries to find something it recognizes. And you're trying so hard to find something, thinking that I think eventually you might hear something that's not actually there because you're listening to that just repetitive sound for so much.
So the first thought that crossed into my mind was that brain damaged ghost investigators would probably be less apt to have that happen.
Supposedly, I guess. That's a possibility.
All right. We still managed to talk about EVPs for another 30 minutes here, even after we say we're not going to get on that subject.
Yeah, I know. Well, they're an interesting subject.
I sent you a link last week on a bunch of models of cameras that could be converted to infrared. Did you get that?
I did. It looked pricey. It definitely was a pricey thing.
It was like $350, but I didn't know what an actual infrared camera cost, so I didn't know if that was cheaper or more expensive or how that worked out.
I don't know about an actual infrared camera, and I think from what I saw those, what you did is you have to put filters, you were putting filters onto your lens. But
the one that I read said there's filters built into the cameras already exclude the infrared and the ultraviolet. So basically they're removing the filters and opening it up so it captures all the visible light and stuff.
Right, exactly, yeah. I know a few people who've done infrared film, which is a lot easier than probably take... Well, no, I don't know. Infrared film is cheaper to buy, but it's harder to work with. Infrared film, where you're working with normal film, generally it has to be kept dark. You know, you have to change the film and to put it in the camera, you have to just be in a dark place, maybe not a pitch dark place. But when you're working with infrared film, it has to be pitch dark. You can't be in any light whatsoever. It's very sensitive. it has to be shipped cold and kept cold. And, you know, and it's a lot harder to work with. So I think, you know, they probably balance out at the same time.
So, do you have, being the photography guru here, any theory about where these spirits might be residing, the infrared or the ultraviolet, or?
Well, the leading theory in the field is infrared. I've had an investigator in my group who has worked with ultraviolet. I mean, it can't hurt. I think it's a great idea to try and possibly believe that, you know, there is more in the light realm than what we can see. If you think of what we actually see as far as emitted out from the sun, it's very narrow. The best way that I've heard it described to me was, if you think of a football field being the light spectrum, we only see about 1 yard worth. You know, and the infrared takes up a whole lot on one side and goes into X-rays and gamma rays, and ultraviolet on the other side and radio frequencies. So there's a lot more there. So it would be a logical guess to actually think, it's a logical thing to actually think that possibly something that we can hear and smell and sometimes see might actually be in that realm that we can never see.
That is just right to the above or below where we can see, and that's how sometimes they cross over and you get a glimpse for a split second or something, was the theory that I read.
Right,
and
makes, that's
it. You know, logical sense to me.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I think, too, the reason why a lot of people are starting to capture more and more supposed spirit pictures using digital cameras than they used to with 35 millimeters and just, you know, your film cameras, is because these digital cameras, like you said, some of the ones you can buy now, you can remove the filter. That, you know, it's in there where they actually have the ability to look into that light realm, and they actually record it a little bit without having to use a filter. So where, if, you know, just for a point of reference, say there you see 1 foot, they might see, and that's why you can see that. For instance, you know, when you use your remote control for your TV, you point at the TV, that's using infrared light to shoot out at, you know, the TV to look. One way to test to see if your camera is actually able to see into that infrared a little bit is to have someone take a picture of you while you're holding down the button and flipping through. If you can see a little bit of red light coming out of where your remote control is, that camera is actually picking up a little bit of the infrared light that you can't see.
Okay. What would you use to test the ultraviolet side of it? Like a grow lamp or something like that? Don't they produce ultraviolet or something?
Yeah, they do, but things you can also see it normal. It's because this infrared is so invisible to us, in itself. It's all around. This ultraviolet's all around us, too. But most of the ultraviolet light that we think of and most people use are your black light, you know, and even your lights, you know, your big light fixtures in bigger buildings, the neon lights, you know, they give off some ultraviolet, I think the light that they already emit themselves is so overpowering that you wouldn't probably be able to catch the ultraviolet. I can't think of a way right off the top of my head how we would do that.
Okay, yeah, because I don't know that much about it. I'm just starting to read up on all this stuff, and I'm trying to, you know, you got all these experts that have combed all this data for so long, and little old me's looking through it trying to find that one thing everybody missed, like I'm really going to find it, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, gives me hope. What the heck?
Why not? You know, but for every person looking, eventually one of us is going to end up being right. So maybe it'll be
That's what I said. This is such a great field because it's wide open. It doesn't require multi-million dollars worth of research grants or anything else. You know, Anybody listening to this show can become an investigator, and we all have just as equal of a chance of finding that one piece of irrefutable evidence, and that's what intrigues me so much.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's some of the more, to get into the field and to start doing a true research, you know, I feel you just need a grasp on the scientific method, and that's if you're going to do scientific type research. There's people who don't, there's nothing wrong with that if that's the way you do it. And if you're going to be the type that's out to capture that evidence and be that one to get it, you know, you just need a grasp of the scientific method. They teach that in fourth, fifth grade now. You can get some of this stuff. You can get your camera and you can get your recorder. You can get this stuff at Walmart, Radio Shack, you know, wherever you can get electronics, and you can start. And then, you know, as you make your way into it, we'll start getting some more of the more higher-end equipment that's out there. And you can go in spending thousands of dollars, or you can just spend, you know, $100 here and there. It's totally up to you.
And the thing is, you can spend that thousands of dollars on equipment, which we're not even sure works yet, because nobody knows yet. So, when you're talking about scientific methods, I think you're referring to just, you know, the art of documentation and redundancy and things like that. Because as far as, you know, using certain equipment or anything like that, there is no right or wrong way at this point, because nobody knows.
Right, yeah, exactly. I think I want to, you know, go into our next kind of piece of equipment here. It is a more of a scientific tool that you use investigating. And these ones here, some Radio Shacks might carry them, the bigger ones, or some of your probably more higher-end electronic stores, but is an EMF meter. And that's usually one of the biggest questions people will generally ask me is, where can I find an EMF meter, and what does it actually do? And I think a lot of people have a real big misunderstanding of EMF and what it actually does, and, you know, what are you actually picking up with these meters? EMF stands for electromagnetic field, and when you're reading the meter, you're actually reading a measurement of milligauss or teslas. Generally, it's milligauss. Teslas, I believe, are one-tenth below milligauss. They're relative, pretty much the same, just a different reading. It's kind of almost like Fahrenheit and Celsius, but a little bit more. The teslas are just a tenth off. But as I said earlier, spirits are supposed, and this is pretty much the general consensus amongst most groups, is spirits are disembodied energy. So here we are, we just had electromagnetic field, electro energy. And spirits, so what these meters actually do and what they're designed for, they weren't built for the purpose of hunting ghosts. They weren't built for the purpose of trying to find your deceased ancestors or to communicate with spirits. They were designed to measure radiation. Everything gives up, your microwave gives off radiation, your TV, you know, the old adage, don't sit too close to the TV, don't, you know, stand too close to the microwave, it'll make you sick. That's because they're giving off electromagnetic radiation. And that's what these devices are designed for. Basically, if you were moving to a house and you just moved in and you want, you're just trying to decide where do I want to put my bed in the bedroom, they suggest you take one of these meters and you walk around the room and put your head, you know, you're going to want to sleep where your head is in the lowest EMF radiation. Or if you think your microwave is giving off too much, you use it to test. You know, and it gives you your readings. There's unhealthy levels, and there's very unhealthy levels, and there's levels that the human body can withstand. And that's what these meters are originally designed for. When paranormal investigating came along, it started getting into the idea of, well, if spirits are energy, and they need to manifest energy or suck energy into manifest, well, then they might be manipulating this electromagnetic radiation, these electromagnetic fields in the area. Or they might be emitting some of their own. So while investigating, you know, this is where people say, well, how do I actually use this? And most people, a lot of times when you see them with these new groups, they don't know how to use it, and they just walk around with it, and whenever it does something, they figure they have a spirit. it's basically, if you're, every room has kind of a baseline, a medium, you know, or an average EMF level, you know, usually between 0, 2.5, 3 milligauss. If that's your medium, then that's okay. Any variation in that, unexplained, will mean something. Or the exact opposite, it will say, if you're in a cemetery, your medium should be zero. There should be no electromagnetic radiation in a cemetery. There's no outlets, there's no light switches, there's no microwaves or TVs or something emitting that radiation, but then you find some sort of radiation, well, then that might be spirit radiation. And then you have to try and see if it moves, if it's in one spot at 1 minute, and then you can maybe trace it to another spot at another minute. And a lot of times these moving electromagnetic fields that are thought to be spirits will also be associated with cold spots, which also in turn is why you see a lot of investigators using temperature reading equipment.
Yeah, it seems like most investigative teams have got this whole slew of equipment covering all kinds of different things, and that gets back to what we just said, that nobody really knows what you're looking for yet. So you're trying to cover your bases as many ways as you can with temperature and EMF and all that. So what I've seen on TV now, generally if they find a high EMF reading, then you start to move the meter in every direction to see if it goes down or to see if it leads you toward a source, I take it?
Right. You know, so when you're initially in a room, you know, and you find some sort of EMF, your first instinct should be to try and find where it's coming from naturally. And there are some higher end models that don't that only has natural EMF readings. They don't respond to your outlets and your TVs and microwaves. But those run, you know, between $300 and $500. So
what are those? Just calibrated differently, so they don't even start working till it gets to a certain point.
It's something along the. I don't have one, and I haven't really used one, so I don't want to really speak on it too much because I might be wrong. But basically,
now I see where some of you use a frequency detector.
We've used frequency detectors in our investigations. And I think a few other groups might have tried to jump in and use a frequency counter. They use that to try and basically it was another form of EVP where we were figuring maybe there, you know, the spirit's giving off the energy and it might be emitting on a specific frequency. So if we were to get a frequency to pop up on a counter that we knew wasn't a commonly used frequency, you know, it wasn't a police band, or it wasn't an AM band, it wasn't a ham band, it was a frequency we know isn't really being used, we'll tune to that and open the squelch and ask some questions. And use the white noise from that frequency to actually try and talk.
Okay, because it just seems to me that there's so many different radio waves floating around in the air at all times that I don't know, it would have to be a pretty strong signal to convince me that it wasn't just something randomly floating around out there, you know.
Right, exactly. And I'm sure you will get some random stuff floating around, and that's the nature of the beast, but it's up to, I guess, a good investigator to really be able to decipher what is random and what isn't.
Yeah. And getting back to the EMF, I can just imagine what kind of readings you'd get for a base reading in a house, you know, sitting under high tension lines or something like that. I know
right.
We've always had to joke. We see a house sitting under a high tension line, and we say, well, they don't have to worry about having any kids, you know.
You know, but that's an actual, you know, cause. I mean, and this is why these meters were originally invented, was to help measure these unhealthy levels. There is such a thing as EMF allergies, people who are allergic to electromagnetic radiation. And a large portion of the population actually has some sort of allergic reaction to EMF. Some are more severe than others. And, you know, I was doing a little bit of research, and it was a case in Europe, and it was the United Kingdom, where one person, he could not be around electricity. He would break out in hives. I mean, it was almost like somebody who's allergic to bees and they get stung by a bee. This person, when he got around cell phones, microwaves, you know, large outlet, he would have the same type of allergic reaction. For more common people, it's not as severe, but a long-term exposure to higher levels can actually produce, and this is where sometimes it will come into our paranormal investigations also, is it will produce hallucinations, nausea, feelings of being watched, tingling sensation on the skin, goosebumps. These are all things people say, well, I saw a ghost present because I felt like I was being watched. I got the goosebumps. My skin crawled. And, you know, then you might have seen something, the hallucination end of it. So a lot of times, a good scientific investigator will actually maybe use this meter to maybe help debunk some of the claims, saying, yeah, I don't think you have a ghost. I just think you're an extremely unhealthy EMF level.
Now, this guy in England, did he have to go live in a cave or what?
He had to sleep under a special tent. You know, he had to have clothes. It was like a fishnet tent made out of metal. You know, he had to live under that. Yeah,
Faraday's cage, I guess they call it.
Yeah, he couldn't be around cell phones. He could never use a cell phone. You know, some stuff along those lines. It was about a year ago when I got it, and I printed it out for a class I was teaching, and I don't have the paperwork with me anymore. But it was an actual newspaper article from the London Times or some newspaper in the United Kingdom.
That's weird. It wasn't right under an article like I had a UFO baby or anything, was it?
No, it was a, you know, legitimate, you know, respectable, you know, news source, you know, reporting on this poor guy who had, you know, allergic reactions to pretty much modern technology.
Jeez, that's weird. I did notice running around my house with the K2 meter that I got that the only place I really got a reading off it was right smack in front of the microwave. You don't realize what a microwave oven gives off, and this was when it wasn't even on. It was lighting up a couple lights on a K2 meter.
Yeah, the K2 is a very sensitive. And there's a lot of different EMF meters out there. And there's two in particular that a lot of groups have kind of taken into and adopted. And without a good understanding of EMF, they're using these meters just wrongly. One is the EMF cell sensors or ghost meters, and the other is the K2s. And, you know, they both have flashy lights, and these people are really just kind of going off the lights and the lights only. And you really can't do that. And I even did the same thing when I first started. You know, my first EMF meter was a cell sensor because they're the cheapest, you know, they serve the purpose, and they were the cheapest ones you can get. And whenever you get above 2 milligauss, it flashes a red light and it beeps at you. So whenever we walked around and the red light flashed and it beeped, we said, oh, there's a ghost here. You know, and once you actually learn about what you're looking for, you're looking for fluctuations in the zone. You could walk by anything and it could be a 2. A 2 could be your medium for that room. There's not necessarily the 2 is your ghost. If you're in a cemetery, and like I said earlier, you're in a cemetery and there should be no electricity, and you get a 1 or 1.5, that's not enough to make that thing trigger up and flash, but it's enough to make you say, that's something there. You know, you got to learn how to actually use these things properly, not just say, oh, it has flashing lights, and just because they're flashing, a ghost is with me.
Yeah, exactly. You got to figure out what your normal is, and then look for the abnormal. Have you used any of the MEL meters? I've been reading up on them, and they seems like a lot of people are recommending like an MEL-8704, I think, is the one that comes up most often. And
not even
I don't know
familiar
just
with
what.
That.
Yeah, it's a digital. Well, there I just brought up a website here, and this one's advertising it as the world's only paranormal EMF and cold spot research validation instrument. So it's basically it measures EMF and it measures the ambient temperature both in the same handheld meter. So you can watch both variations and fluctuations without carrying around 2 meters with you.
Yeah, those are actually very good meters. They're actually made by your standard meter that everybody uses, made by Lutron, the little black meters are the ones that you see Steve Gonzalez and everybody carry around when on Ghost Hunters. You know, it's made by that same company. It's a very reliable EMF meter. And basically what they did is they realized that at the same time, like I said earlier, a lot of times when we get these EMFs, these paranormal EMF zones, is also coincides with a drop in temperature. So they said, well, why don't we get something that can also measure ambient air temperature? Because a lot of people are just using these trigger ones with the laser pointer. They don't realize that they're not getting the temperature of what's in front of them. They're getting it of what's on the wall across the room. So they kind of took a step ahead and said, well, we're going to get them both. It is a very reliable and very accurate EMF meter. Again, you just have to learn how to use it. And I like it. It doesn't have these fancy little bells and flashing lights and alarms that go off at certain levels. It is a very accurate piece of equipment. I know a few people who have them, and I've worked with it a couple times, and it does work very well.
And while I was researching K2 meters, I've seen where a few people have modified them to put speakers inside or something, so you don't have to sit there and just stare at the lights the whole time, and while you're doing that, you could be missing a ghost walking right behind you or something. So they put a little meter or a speaker in there so it actually makes a sound when they get a reading so you can, you know, concentrate on other things.
Yeah, that would work also, I suppose. There are a few things that are out there now people are using that are supposed they call like audio EMF, where it actually translates the EMF fields into sound devices, and some people are using it for the purpose of EVP. Some people are using it because it'll kind of point you in the right direction that has stereo sound, and you know, with stereo sound you are able to maybe go in the direction you can hear it coming from, and a bunch of stuff from along those lines.
Speaking of that, I don't want to get back on the subject of EVPs again, but when I was researching voice recorders, they've got some out there now that actually have 4 different microphones on them, kind of like one on each corner, and you can actually, it's for musicians actually, to record 4 tracks right in this little handheld recorder. And if it wasn't so darn expensive, I was thinking of grabbing one just to see if you get an EVP on one microphone but not on the other 3, you know, if it might kind of point you in the right direction, you know, as you were just saying, is you know, with stereo and stuff.
That's a very good point when it comes to EVP, and I guess if we're going to talk about scientific aspect of things, and most recorders are what's called, and use a microphone that's called omnidirectional. In other words, where you're pointing the microphone is where you're going to get the sound from. Now, if you start thinking about an investigation where you might have 2, 3, 4 people at a time in any given room during the course of your investigation, not everybody is going to be right in front of you. So you can test this out very easily. But basically, if you're holding and you're asking the questions, obviously you're going to be sounding relatively clear because you're right on top of the microphone. If somebody's behind you, away from the microphone, away from the direction the microphone is pointing, they're going to almost sound EVP-like. they're going to sound muffled, distant, away, not with the actual audio, and because they're using an omnidirectional microphone. It, you know, it really does help if you can use a dual or multi-directional microphone that is actually capturing a 360-degree view of sound around it and capturing everything. That way, the person behind you whispering doesn't sound very distant and not really there and getting kind of a false EVP.
Okay, now that goes exactly opposite of what I read the other day, where a guy, he uses an external microphone, and he puts he goes to the hardware store and he buys a funnel, and he puts a funnel around the microphone to turn it into a directional one, and he said he gets a lot better EVPs that way. So, you know, it goes back to what we said. Everybody's got their own way, and nobody knows what's right and what's wrong yet.
And, well, I suppose, I mean, there is nothing wrong with that, as long as you're investigating alone, or the person you're working with does not say a word or talks to a single other person while you're there. Because what you're doing now, especially if somebody else is with you and they talk, they are going to sound muffled and away and distant. They're going to sound just like an EVP on your recorder because, you know, they're not right in the direction of the microphone. If you're working alone and you get stuff with that, and maybe he does, I don't know, I haven't read that, and I don't want to bash the guy without knowing him. If he works alone and he's getting great results with it, then it probably works, and that's great for him. But if you're working with large groups and you're doing that, if somebody's talking behind you and it's not the direction the microphone's pointing, it's going to sound a whole lot like an EVP.
Yep, what you're saying makes sense, you know, makes sense to me, but at the time when I read what he was saying, that made sense to me too. So it just goes back to what we were saying that, you know, we don't even know what's right and what's wrong yet, but we've got a guest on the line here that maybe will be able to tell us right from wrong if you want to introduce him.
Oh, well, we have with us now for our second hour, Michael Baker. He is the creator and producer, director of 14 Degrees, which has grown some very good success in the paranormal field. It's a paranormal film documentary. It really covered a lot of what we talk about, where we've talked about back and forth on both all the aspects of scientific and non-scientific types of investigations. And since taking on the film, he's really himself become one of the more foremost experts in the field with along the lines of technology and science in paranormal investigating. Where, you there with us, Mike?
I'm here. How you doing, Josh, Alan?
Good,
thanks,
good. How you doing?
Good.
It is our pleasure.
I've been listening
you know,
to your...
Oh, go ahead.
No, I've been listening to your discussion a bit on the EVPs. That's a pretty good discussion going on, huh?
Oh, there is.
It seems like every week we get into an EVP discussion.
Oh, and EVP, you know, I guess with everything we do in this whole field, everything is subject to discussion because, you know, there is no set guidelines and, you know, everybody has their way of doing it and we all think our way is right. So it all makes a good discussion because you can always banter back and forth about which was the right way and which was the wrong way.
Yeah, you know, that's true. There's a lot of people who have different viewpoints on it and, you know, some of the things that I've been doing with EVP specifically, it kind of, you know, was touching a kind of a sensitive spot for me here with I've been doing a little bit of research with EVPs and I've actually been able to replicate them. I can actually get sound to travel non-radio wave through the air into a microphone where everybody else in the room can't hear it at all, non-audibly, both electric condenser and dynamic microphone. And
I have to ask how you did it then.
Well, we're doing a video on it that's going to show how to do it. The Mystery Lab series we're working on is going to actually show it. But it deals with fluctuating electromagnetic waves at the same frequency as audio. And when you know, the microphones that we use, the only thing that's remained the same throughout all the years with all the different changes in format and recorder have been microphones. They all use microphones. And they either are dynamic, which are the original kind of microphone, or for a period they were using condenser, but during the period in the 50s and 60s where EVPs were starting to pick up, they broke into some electric condenser style microphones, which is a combination of both dynamic and condenser. But the electric microphone responds to electrical waves, electric fields, and the dynamic microphones respond to magnetic fields. So the electromagnetic fluctuation, if you take an electromagnetic wave, an audio wave, and you transform it into an electromagnetic field and pump up the wattage, you can actually imprint a voice directly onto a recorder with a microphone and never even hear it.
Yep, and that kind of begs the, you know, the argument now, and, you know, is that, you know, is a spirit present when you're doing your recording somehow manipulating electromagnetic waves, because supposedly they are electromagnetic or, you know, electricity in themselves embedding into your microphone in some way or manner then?
Well, you know, here's the funny thing. And having done this, it's even more of a paranormal event, and I'll tell you why. The wattage it takes to produce this to happen is tremendous, actually. I mean, you need about a 50-watt amplifier to make the thing jump about 2 feet.
Wow.
So it pretty much eliminates the idea that anybody standing outside in the other room with any kind of equipment doing this. It also eliminates the idea that anybody from a radio station is pumping up any kind of wattage that's going to get into your house to do this. It really is something interesting. And my personal hypothesis is that when we get EMF spikes in a room that are unusual, I think those are EVPs that nobody has recorded.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That EMF spike is them pushing out, you know, those magnetic waves to try and that your microphone would normally imprint.
Right. You know, and it's because they're very locationalized. You know, I mean, you either get an EMF spike or you get an EVP. You never get them both in the exact same location at the same time. It's very hard to monitor that. And so, you know, what you think about it, if we passed on to some other existence and we're talking, we're still going to try to communicate with the same frequency structure, our language. But yet we don't have a resonant voice box. We are now talking in radiance, electromagnetic radiance. So the frequencies are staying the same, which is our voice, our sound, our tone. But yet it's not a resonant frequency pushing air molecules. It is now an electromagnetic resonance that can be picked up in another format. It kind of makes sense.
It does. In the way you describe it, it makes absolute sense. I can completely see the way you're describing it.
And having done it in the
my
laboratory...
My thought was, what do we detect these with?
Well, let me tell you. There's one particular experiment that I'm trying... And I'm going to be doing this in Burlington, New Jersey, in a Burlington prison in New Jersey. I'm going to try to reverse engineer it and try to communicate the other way. So rather than, if these things are talking in electromagnetic frequencies, chances are they can hear in electromagnetic frequencies. So us just talking, moving around air molecules, they're not really going to hear us very well. If you talk through a PA system or a speaker system, that speaker is generating those fluctuating electromagnetic waves, even though it's also moving air at the same time. So by talking through a speaker system to ask your questions, I want to see if you get better results.
Yeah, you very well might. That makes perfect sense. You could almost, you know, next time I investigate, I might want to just bring a little microphone and headset
some
with
PC speakers or
like
something,
that.
You know?
Yeah, you know, that's... You know what? What will it hurt to really try? You know, as long
Nothing.
As you have a good, as long as you have a good basis behind why you're doing it, it's not going to, you know, kill you to try.
Right. It has some scientific theory behind it. It's not just a random thing. And you know, if I am able to pick these sounds up, you know, I'm working on a microphone that has a separation and uses Hall effect transistors at the tip, so I can measure if there's any extra electromagnetic disturbances at the microphone when these things are recorded, right at that particular space at the end of the microphone. I want to see if there is any. That'll lay some credibility into and back up this theory a little bit.
You're right, and it'll also, you know, help get rid of the, you know, the big, you know, naysayer saying, well, you were just getting a stray radio signal. I wasn't. You know, this got picked up right here. This wasn't a radio signal at the same time coming through.
Right. And you know, that's the thing too. You think about the radio signal theory. If it were a broadcast radio station, it would be continuous sound. They frown on dead airwaves. So you wouldn't just get one word here and there. So what they're talking about is maybe CB communication or shortwave. It can't be cellular because cellular is encrypted digital waves. I doubt that the recorder...
And it's such, I think it's such a high frequency, too, that I don't think it would actually even get in on it.
I agree with you. I think, you know, it's really no higher than ultra high frequencies that we use for television, but it is still too high for an average circuit to pick up. Average circuits usually pick up only AM mostly, and maybe some low band FM frequencies. So I don't think that, you know, at the highest, I mean. So I think you're right. I think it's too high to pick up.
Yeah, I lost my train of thought. I had a question in mind, and I forgot what it was.
Well, there goes my idea. I've got this 1 gigabyte satellite transmitter sitting on my roof I've been trying to figure out what to do with, and I said, gee, maybe I can figure out how to use that for EVPs, but you just blew me out of the water on that one.
Well, I was able to replicate a process of doing that because I've always wondered, you know, how do these things get there without anybody hearing them and in perfect fidelity and clarity? And this certainly does it. I'm not sure if it's the only way it can happen, but it's certainly a way for it to happen. And dealing with, you know, everything is in somewhat of the electromagnetic spectrum, it kind of makes sense. Dying to get out to a field and try to communicate back and forth and also measure the magnetic frequencies at the end of the mic while recording. I got to get to a really active place, you know?
Yeah, something, you know, the middle of Gettysburg or something along those lines.
Exactly.
You know, out in the middle of the battlefield where you're not going to have any buried conduit or anything going over your head or any outlets near you, just you and your equipment.
And that's it. You're exactly right. Yeah, it's got to be controlled. I'm a big stickler for controlled situations.
Oh, you have to. And I mean, there's two ways of doing all this, and you know there is. You know, you have your true diehard scientific. Everything's controlled, and I have a method to the way I investigate. And your more metaphysical side. Using some psychic or religious backing. And then you do have kind of some people using a hybrid of both. And they each have their purpose, and they each do what they do well. In some situations, you want one more than the other. But I think if you're going to do the scientific one, you have to bone up. You have to, learn your terms, learn what this equipment does, and, actually get out there and foolproof yourself and test it.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. 100%. A lot of groups are just really doing too much investigating and not enough research when they're trying to be completely scientific, you know. They're not looking into the other possibilities of what things could be, and they're satisfied with just the audio recordings and the photos, but it goes a little beyond that. You got to dig a little bit deeper to understand it.
I mean, and that's the way I kind of, think I try to operate. I've been I've been running my group now for almost 5+ years. Yeah, we've probably done no more than a dozen investigations. Where some groups will be together for a year, they've done one a month, they've got more than a dozen. They're just going place after place after place and collecting everything they can, and they're going for the quantity of investigation, not the quality of the investigation. I feel I'm more lucky. I get out, I go to one place. I have the Houghton Mansion, and I got a key to it. And we consider ourselves more researchers than investigators. Well, we're going in and we can say, all right, I want to try this tonight. There's no need to bring 8 cameras and a DVR system and 8 EMF meters and 30 camcorders. And, we're just bringing this tonight. And we're going to work on this and see what happens when we use this meter or this piece of equipment and compare it.
And you're more likely to find facts or notice patterns a lot better than a group that has done 150 investigations because you're in the same place, which is the benefit that people who are suffering from paranormal disturbances that they don't want around, they have that benefit of being in the house 24 hours a day or
right.
Not completely, but, you know, the majority of the time. And if you think about it, when you interview them, they say that they're going to, they have their activity happen maybe once every couple of weeks, sometimes once every month. And how are you going to go in for just one night and capture that? It's really not
You're asking for it to capture. And unfortunately, the way a lot of these newer groups are in, you know, upstart groups are going is they're just going everywhere they can. They're going there once just to say they've been there. I really feel that when you investigate, you should always try and make a return visit, especially if you had something happen, and maybe even have nothing happen. Try to make a return visit, because, like you said, if the family's only experienced something once every 2 weeks, that's not very good odds in your behalf that it's going to happen when you go.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that's the whole point of scientific research, is to understand it. And you're right. Even if you don't get anything, that doesn't mean you should eliminate it in the same respect. And I know I've known a couple of different groups that have come and gone, and they have, you know, decided, oh, if we didn't get anything there, we're never going back there. But it's, that's the wrong attitude. You got to be just as happy to debunk something as you are to capture something. Otherwise, you're going to burn yourself out very quickly.
Exactly. And, you know, I know there's some people out there, their whole sole purpose in investigating is to debunk everything they find. And I suppose that's good. And if you go to a client and you can tell it, I think when we're talking about private investigations and performing investigations for the purpose of going to someone's personal house, your main goal isn't, I guess, to find proof. You know, it might be in the back of your mind your goal, but your sole purpose should be to make that person feel more comfortable in their own home. You know, that's why they called you. They didn't call you so you can get some sort of proof to brag to your other paranormal friends about.
You're right. You're right.
So you have to kind of cater it to them. If they're going to feel more comfortable in their home by you saying, all right, here is a special cleansing prayer, and you'll feel better, then that's just what might work. If I can go in and say, and debunk it all, and, well, that noise you've been hearing upstairs is just the wind blowing and knocking the window pane around. Oh, I feel so much better. I can sleep now. Or if you go and you find something, then you might try and start taking some alternative methods forward to try and help them either, A, come to terms with what's happening in their house, or maybe they need some sort of religious talk to help move the spirit on, or a psychic to say move the spirit on, and from those aspects.
You know, or even...
That's where, as a group, you might have to, if you're a scientific group, you might have to actually start saying, all right, I got to stray away from my scientificness, you know, bite my tongue to help this person feel better in their own home.
I agree, yeah. You're right. And if you do find something that is an active space, it might even help to do a little more research about it and see if you can determine whether it is something that's malevolent in some cases or just whether it's telekinetic energy or whatever it is. Like you said, to help them live with it and to find something about it. You're right. You got to put, once you find out that something is paranormal, you're in uncharted territories in terms of science.
Exactly.
and you have to kind of wing it at that point until you learn a little bit more about it.
And the way I always kind of describe it, and I've been describing it in the past few weeks on the show here, is, you know, we are somewhat of a science, but it's a quasi-science. And your sciences, you know, in your mainstream science, physics has guidelines, borders, and set mathematical equations. We don't have that yet. That's what we're trying to get to. So, as you know, that's what we're all, I guess, that's scientific groups and are trying to eventually approach and get to.
Right. You're right. We don't. There aren't any defined lines yet, because there hasn't been any real identification of what paranormal energy actually is. I mean, a lot of people think that it's electromagnetic fields, which it could be, but the thing is, it could also be that the disturbances that we're seeing are just that, just disturbances in the electromagnetic spectrum, and the source of it might be something totally new that we've never even discovered.
Absolutely. I mean, who are we to say that what we are even talking to might not even be a spirit? Maybe there is a naturally causing phenomenon of electromagnetic balls that float around the atmosphere that we somehow have a reaction to when, as human beings, when we're around it, to make us hallucinate or get these weird experiences that we would associate with a haunting. That's you know, some people would feel as a very logical explanation to it. It's still paranormal, it's just not a ghost.
Right. Or dimensions, if you follow Carl Sagan at all, with Flatland and the interaction of multiple dimensions. You know, it could be anything, and we just don't know yet. And it's very hard to get samples of the data because we're dealing with, you know, multiple locations, so many different things, and it happens so sporadically and so minimal. It's very hard to get samples.
And I think, too, and you probably agree with me, is that there's no, and I think you're actually trying to work on this a little bit, there's no set reporting guidelines. And I know you've kind of started a webpage to help with that, with people actually doing reporting.
Yes.
You know, there's no reporting guidelines, or there's no set guidelines on how to measure it exactly, and how to report it, and how to document it. Everybody has their own way. We're all scattered all over the place.
They also have their own stash of information, results from different places and locations. And none of it is shared, and none of it is put in a good format that anybody can use in other locations. What I hope to do is I want to find patterns. I want to eventually be able to predict this activity like the weather, to know the atmospheric changes and the impacts that are coming, so we might be able to say, hey, look at all these conditions are met. We're more likely to have this type of experience now. And, once we can learn that, then we can really start to study it and identify it and know whether it is something to be afraid of or not.
Absolutely. That makes complete sense. And I think, once we get that, a database, or, right now everything is just ghost stories. Everybody has a ghost story. And I think, once you get a more logical and narrowed down way of just, all right, tell me what happened and just, What was this? What was the milligauss? What did the EVP say? And when did it say it? A simple, narrowed down approach of how to look at it and document it.
Right. To get everybody on the same page. And, that's one of the things that when I started the website National Evidence, which I'm hoping to get finished this month. But a lot of people, when I've told them about it, they're thinking, oh, is it going to be full of pictures and sounds? No, it's really not going to be that. It's more data. Data from the equipment when it reacted during a paranormal event. And the reason behind that, rather than having photos and pictures, is because people, as you know, working with other people, groups can be very egotistical about their evidence. They're very shy to give it up. They want 100% credit all the time for everything that they've done, which is fine because they put in the work to get it. But that also makes them unwilling to share it for people to study. So I figure the data is much less of an impact on them as people, personally or egotistically. They can share, oh, my meter shot up 20 points during this activity. And that's all we really want to know, with the temperature drop during this. Stuff like that, which really doesn't sacrifice any of their final evidence, as they might consider it, yet it gives information to other groups to be able to use and maybe build up patterns and statistics. I would love to be able to build statistics about experiences. That would be fantastic.
And and that's true. And you said they ask you, oh, is that pictures and sounds? They're looking for entertainment. Most people, when they're on the internet, they're looking for some sort of entertainment. And, that's what they want. This is something that's supposed to be a more serious and documenting tool. There's web pages to have your ghost stories and your weird ghost pictures. And you're right, people are very protective of their evidence. I get it a lot. My kind of field of expertise is paranormal photography. So I get a lot of people will come to me with their pictures, and sometimes I got to bite my tongue. Because, I can look at something right away and say, your flash didn't go off, your shutter speed was a little slow.
Lens flare,
like
dust, bug, whatever,
There's a million things, but, they look at it and they got it set in their mind that it's a ghost, and good luck telling them it's not, because you're in for a fight. And
you're right.
You really
you're
are.
You're right.
And then they're arguing with you, but you don't understand. This is happening, and this is happening, and this is happening. I go, I understand that. All I'm telling you is, I'm not trying to tell you that it's not a ghost. I'm just telling you how I could do the same thing with my camera.
Right.
And
they're not looking for your experienced opinion. They're looking for your validation.
Right. And if you don't give them the validation, then they're just going to move on to the next person who does.
Then you don't know what you're talking about.
Nope. I guess not.
Yeah, you know, it's very true, and that's why... I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I was just checking out your website here, National Evidence, and...
right now it's just one
being
page.
A web yep, and being a web designer, the first thing that came to mind was you ought to add make up this form as like a PDF file and put a little button on there where somebody can download this form and then print a bunch of them out to have on hand and carry with them, you know.
Well, that's a good idea. They can take it. It would still ultimately be needed to be entered into the computer, but you're right. That's not a bad idea. I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking for something when you're out in the field, you know, like my wife went to a cemetery the other night and caught an EVP, you know, so if I could have handed her this form and she had it with her, you know, she could have filled out a lot of this stuff while she was right there, and then when you bring it back, you know, you got all these papers, and then come and enter them into your database.
Excellent idea. In fact, that will be done. That's a great idea. Yeah,
I mean, I could actually, that's something I can actually find myself happening to myself a lot. You know, I go and I do an investigation, and your investigation usually takes place at middle of the night on a weekend. So the next day, you're not thinking, I'm going to sit down and start analyzing evidence. I'm sleeping all day and relaxing because I'm tired from being up all night. And then so maybe that Sunday, Monday, you got to go to work. So by the time you maybe get out of work and you sit down to analyze your evidence, you just go, What happened? You know.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
You might be thinking, we all take notes, but there's always that one thing you forgot to take a note on, or that one word you left out, or that one temperature reading you forgot to put down, and you're like, you're going,
well,
oh,
that's it.
Crap.
You're right.
This would both serve as a checklist at the time, and then also for something to help you refresh your memory afterwards.
You're right. You're right. It really is an excellent suggestion, and I'm definitely going to do that with both sites, actually, the National Registry and the National Evidence. But I think that's a great idea. Thanks for that input, because that's excellent.
Now, is that something
you're... No problem. And if you need help with anything, I'm a web designer, so if you need any help, just give me a holler.
Well, thank you, Alan. I appreciate it.
Now, are these web pages something you're completely doing on your own, or do you have any kind of backing or funding from anyone else, or is this kind of your own little project?
Well, it's all on my own. The idea was to create a site. You know, in order to get people to work together, I needed to get a place that they could all be together. And so I figured I'd do this in two stages. And the first stage would be the National Registry, where I can actually conduct the first active census of paranormal groups. I mean, I have a committee that is checking state by state to find paranormal groups. Groups can also go there and register themselves if they don't see themselves listed. But this is an actual census to try to find groups and list them and verify that their site is up, what kind of methods they use, scientific or medium or both. And it gives location of where they cover, so we can look on a map and see a really good, detailed, up-to-date figure of where in the United States paranormal research has been covered and where it hasn't. And this is more to bring the people together in one place. There's also an EMF registry on there, database, where people can have, compare their readings of EMF against the EPA's standard readings of output. So if you were standing next to a television on a site and you got a really large spike in energy, you could actually check this against the database online and see whether it is a normal output for a television or whether
right.
It's too high. You know, and it can be updated. I want eventually to have it brand specific, so you could, you know, people will put in, oh, I just measured this for my Sony television. It's this, this brand model, and it was 6 inches away. It gets a reading of this, So over time, people will have a really good reference for that. It's also
I'm sure your different models are going to have different readings. Your higher end stuff might have better shielding in it, where your lower end equipment you're buying is going to have less shielding on the wiring, and it's going to work for you.
Exactly. So it's more like, again, to just share the information that we know, to be able to allow groups to make educated decisions based
right.
on what their evidence is.
Yeah, exactly. That, and I know I have questions. And I know after my last investigation, I saw you on Facebook, so I popped you a message. You know, because I, you know, EMF is one of those things where it is one of the more technical stuff that we really work with. You know, it's kind of hard to grasp. And right after my investigation, I saw you on there, and I was getting such high readings on some stuff that, you know, I had, you know, I said, is this normal? What is unhealthy? What's too unhealthy, what's just going to affect people? And I don't know. And I think a lot of groups don't.
You're right. You know, and there's a lot of stuff online from the Environmental Protection Agency. They did a big study on it in 1992. And they have a lot of data and a lot of research that they've conducted on the health effects of this. And there's a lot of great papers that you can read about the research that they've done. And this is where also I've got the database from them. And you're right that, you know, if you get a high level and it's constant, it could be the experience they're having could be attributed to electromagnetic hypersensitivity more so than just a paranormal occurrence. So, I mean, poor wiring in the house, poor shielding, some unusual sources that are in the neighborhood, whatever it is.
Yeah, this house, for instance, you know, was built in the early 1800s. So, you know, the wiring is going to be somewhat old. I know it wasn't updated recently, and they were getting, you know, 14 milligauss consistently in their living room where they're sitting, and she would tell me how she would sit in the living room and not feel good and have weird feelings, and I was like, this is probably why. I mean, you're not going to die from it, you're not going to catch something from it, but it's not good. It's not going to make you feel good. No, and this is what it was, and two of the rooms where they said they have these weird feelings. One person said it felt like they used to get pushed down. They said they had like a heaviness on their chest. It was in this room. And then the adjacent room next to it, their computer room, was 14 milligauss consistently. I was like,
that's high.
Not good.
No, I mean, high is usually 5 or 6. That's incredible. That's incredibly high for a constant number.
It was, you know, and then everywhere else in the house was pretty normal. I mean, you know, they had some bedrooms that were, you know, between 1 and 3, that's not too bad. Her bed was like a 4. So, I mean, they weren't too bad. I probably wouldn't recommend it, maybe moving the bed, but it's not going to kill you. So I kind of, with this investigation, you know, I've contributed 50-50, because then we had some experiences up in the attic that were just mind-blowing. I had something touch me that wasn't there, and the EMF was actually somewhat normal in the attic, so I said, look, whatever you're happening downstairs probably isn't a ghost. You have some weird EMF stuff going on. It's not good for you. This is what's going on. But the attic, we'll talk about that some other day.
Do you know if they had fluorescent lighting? Or those energy saver light bulbs? By
that's
chance?
A good question.
The ballasts in those produce a very high EMF field.
Do they?
I was just curious. Yeah, they're very, very high.
They weren't fluorescent. They might have had the energy saver bulbs, but I know they didn't have like the big, long fluorescent bulbs. I didn't know that because I have fluorescent bulbs in all my light fixtures.
Check them against an incandescent bulb. You'll see there's a big difference in the EMF readings from them. You know what else I noticed? There was a house that I had gone into not long ago where the woman just bought this house and she had these very bad feelings in certain rooms, and it was just like you had discovered. There's a high level of EMF, but what it turned out is when the cellar light was on, there was a coil. Somebody who had wired the house left a coil of the electrical wire that goes in the wall. It was bundled up in a ball. They didn't do a very neat job of putting it in, and it created this very high EMF field behind the wall, and it was right where the bed was. And so every time she left, and she noticed, you know, I'd go in there and I'd notice this really high reading, and then we'd go through and we'd try to figure out where it was coming from. We thought there was a chimney behind this particular wall, but then we turned off the light in the basement and it went away. So So I said, here's your plan. Don't turn on the basement light, see if it goes away, and it did. She left the light off. In fact, she put a big note on there for nobody to turn it on because she didn't care. There was another light down there she could use, and it went away. She was totally fine after that. So it was, those are the type of things make me feel good, you know. This woman can stay in her house. She's not sick anymore. She's happy. And it wasn't a ghost, but I'm very happy with what I've discovered, you know.
She called, you know, she called the right people. And, you know, as paranormal investigators, our job isn't solely to find a ghost. You know,
right.
Job, when you're dealing with private residents, I know if you're going, you know, if you're going out to Gettysburg, yeah, you're not trying to debunk it. You know, you're trying to, you know. But when somebody
right.
calls you to their house for help, you know, you don't try to find the ghost too hard. You know, try and maybe find that logical reason, and just like you did. You performed her a better service by doing that than you did by telling her dead Uncle Fred was floating around.
Well, that's what her cousin did, who was a medium. I went in there and said, oh, there's all evil spirits in this house. It's terrible. And I told her, I said, there's nothing wrong with your house except for the wiring. I said, and we went up in the attic. We could see the wires. There were two stages of installation. There were the old original wires, and somebody had added new wires. And, you know, we looked in the wall down the slats from you could see down inside the wall from the attic with the way they had it up in there, and you could see the ball of wire behind this wall. It was all coiled up, and there it was, you know, plain as day. It was giving off this, because you know, you wrap wire in a coil, you're going to get an electromagnet. It's just
that,
big.
Yeah, this is a big magnet in the wall.
That's what it was. And you know, I really enjoy that kind of stuff, where finding those kinds of answers really make me happy as much as finding things that I can't explain.
Right. And I get just as excited, you know, if I have somebody contact me and I say, I had great experiences in that house, because, you know, that, for me, that's the thrill of it. You know, there is a thrill factor to ghost hunting. So, I mean, the thrill of it, yeah, actually being there and having some sort of spirit activity while you're present, that's great. But,
right.
You know, you also feel good about yourself when you're able to make the person be able to live in their own home.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's really nothing like it, actually. I mean, I always get, you know, there's been a couple of places that I have made the determination that they really have something paranormal going on in their house, and I always get nervous when it comes to the point where I have to tell them that, because I don't know how they're going to react.
Oh, the tough part is, their question is, that now what do I do?
Right.
You know, and I find that problem for me being the this more scientific factor in ghost hunting, you know, and I don't lend that much to psychics and mediumship and all that stuff. I don't, you know, the groups that do tend towards that type of work and say, well, we can do a cleansing, so I have a hard time, you know, when it comes time to tell them that, because I don't, you know, what do I do next, you know? I try to give them a good reason why they shouldn't be afraid of it. You know, it's okay. It's just this. You know, that's when I usually call a friend who can do cleansings and stuff like that, and bring
well,
them.
Well, that's
in,
what I
them
do.
Do their service.
It's a lot like, you know, a doctor that's diagnosed somebody with a terminal illness and they're recommending try holistic medicine. You know.
Oh yeah.
It's the same kind of idea, because, like we say, we don't have enough information about the paranormal to make it into a perfect science, to have figures and facts. So we have to, we're in uncharted waters once that line is crossed. And other
right.
than just capturing proof of it or evidence of it, that's about all we can do at that particular point. Unless there's something fairly obvious, you know, where it's tied to a specific object or that kind of thing, you know, get rid of the object. Things like that, you might be able to protect yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, and I always, you know, I have a core little group of, you know, a network of psychics and people I have that I've used on different occasions that, you know, I'll go to. You know, you got to trust the people you work with. You know, I'm not, or trust the people you're going to send them to. And we all have our own little network. And I guess, you know, it's too bad the network can't be bigger, or we can all kind of say, this guy's a good guy and he's in California, but he works great. Go to him.
Well, you know, the ones that I would usually turn them over to are the ones that I know have a level head on their shoulders to be able to have the person's better interest in mind, more so
right.
than showing off what they think they can do. And it's, you know, the people that I know are much more psychologists rather than you know, the mediums, so to speak. They are actually very good with people and aren't trying to scare them. They're trying to ease their mind. And I think at that particular point, that's really more what you need than anything else.
Yeah, we kind of brought that up last week, or you know, I think on we were talking about how, you know, this is a quasi-science, and you know, we really aren't too accepted, but it's getting there. I mean, there are you can get a degree in parapsychology. I mean, there are it is out there, and these type of people who are doing that, you know, it's there is a scientific side to this a little bit better, and that's the parapsychology.
Right. Right, and you know, I hope that someday it is more well respected, and that's part of the work that I do. Like a lot of the research I do is probably, you know, 80% in the lab and 20% out in the field, and I'm always at home trying to recreate specific experiences and trying to find ways to understand how things are possible, because it's going to help me look for it when I'm out actually in a location and I understand how things work. And I wish there were more groups that would take the time to do these little lab science projects and try to recreate the things that they're experiencing. Find ways to do it.
You know, last night was kind of, you know, a experiment night for me where I, you know, I've been playing around recently now with, you know, the Hack Box, you know, the Radio Shack version of Frank's Box. I just, you know, and I know how, you know, I'm still pretty much 80-20 as to whether or not, you know, 80 being not paranormal, you know, on it, thinking, you know, what we're getting is radio frequencies. But, you know, I took the, you know, last night, I went down to the Holt Mansion haunted place and sat in a few rooms with that for a couple hours and tried different things. Tried on AM, tried on FM, tried at this volume, you know, tried these questions, tried using it while using a K2, you know.
Right.
Messed around with
it. That's how you learn things. That's how you discover things. Worcester Paranormal actually sent me an obelus because they want me to tear it apart and figure out how it works. And have you ever seen the obelus?
Actually, I have. I have. It's something new. John Zaffis was playing around with one recently.
Yeah, he was playing around with one. It talks. It gives you a word for what it claims to do is take measurements of atmospheric conditions, EMF, temperature, et cetera, and then apply a number to it, and then there's a 500-word list that it pulls whatever number it came up with, it applies it to a number in that list, and then it speaks the word. And the words are just random words. He claims that they're the most common spoken words in the English language, but I won't argue that yet. But I walked in there, and there's absolutely no method of sensing external temperatures, even though it says it senses temperature. There's no method electronically. There's four chips in there, period. A very few other components, no other semiconductors. Two of the chips are microprocessors. One's an amplifier chip, and one is the speech chip that allows it to translate data into spoken word. And there's nothing in there that will sense electromagnetic fields either. There's just two wires placed off as antennas and left open to gather whatever ranges of electric fields or whatever that might happen to float into it. So it's really not set up in any scientific method it's not an EMF meter. You could put it side by side with even a single or triple axis EMF meter and it will not respond in the same route. It won't detect temperature the same way as thermometer will. It's really kind of alarming that somebody is selling this and pushing it this way. It really has nothing to it.
They're really making it sound like a real high end fancy piece of equipment when it's really not.
It's really not. I mean, the process of turning, you know, words into spoken speech, it does it just fine, but it has no atmospheric sensing equipment built into it at all. And, you know, other than just, you know, it's like taking a wire and hooking it up to, if you had an amplifier and you plugged in a wire and just let the wire hang loose, you know, you're going to hear static and weird noises every now and again because the wire's hanging up. That's exactly the principle they went on. It's not an EMF meter. It's not a temperature sensing device. And it's really kind of disturbing to me that this this happens. The K2 you can trigger with a magnet. You know that it's actually doing what they claim
right.
it does. So I'm okay with the K2. I think it's a fine piece of equipment, you know, as long as you know what it's supposed to do. This is just disturbing to me.
I know the K2 works great. I get the best results from my K2 when I'm using it with a bunch of people with a cell phone in their pocket because it's constantly
yeah.
going off.
Yeah, you're right.
I've had so many people, oh, look, it's going off. I'm like, is your cell phone on? Yeah, I just got it back.
Or the radios, man. You got to have radio silence completely. Otherwise,
yeah.
you totally set it off.
It is
a cool device, though. I like it.
It is. It's a very good EMF meter. It's simple, but it's sensitive. It's very sensitive. Yeah,
right.
It does, you know, it's very simple to read with just its five little lights. And, you know, I really do think it's fascinating when, you know, you go in there and you shut your phone off and you have radio silence and you're asking a question and it flashes. You know, where'd it come from? You know, what was that? I've seen it happen, and it's pretty interesting.
It is interesting. There's one particular experiment that I'm going to be doing with a bunch of K2 meters. And you know how we've seen it on Ghost Hunters. Everybody's, you know, has seen where they ask a question, and it does respond to the question.
Yeah.
I want to number them and set up five of them and see if I can get specific ones to light up. And that form of communication to prove that it really is intelligent.
Yeah, that would work. I would think there's no reason why you shouldn't. You know,
if it's what it is, what we think it is, then it should. You know, you space them out far enough so the field doesn't overlap, and say, you know, if you're here, can you light up number one? You know, or something along that line. See if I can get some kind of intelligible communication dealing with numbers. If it is able to do that. If it can happen, can you imagine you could have great communication by having a set of words for each K2 meter and have it respond accordingly? Yes, no, things, you know, very generalized answers, and you know, you could actually open doors of communication with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Al, I know we have a DVD we want to try and get rid of, and I know we're running out of time here. Any ideas on how we want to be able to get that out to the public?
Well, first I wanted to ask Michael to make sure he brought it.
I do have it. Yes, I do. It's a 14 Degrees DVD signed by Karen O'Keefe from Most Haunted and myself. So not that my signature really means much. But anybody, you guys want to give it away, I'll be happy to send it right out.
And if you route it, through me, I'll put my Hancock, John Hancock.
Yeah, you're in it as well.
I'm in there a little bit. So.
You are. You know what? What I'll send it to you then, Josh, and you can send it up to whoever.
We'll raise the price up 2 cents.
Yeah. Between you and me, that's
well, what do we want to do, dude?
I suppose if we could actually, the first person who calls in and wants it, they can have it. If anyone's listening and wants to call in, my computer's down, so I don't have my notes in front of me with the phone number to call, but I'm sure you got it, Al.
Oh, I got it right here, and just to let people know, in case they haven't seen it, it's a two-hour documentary on the paranormal done by Michael Baker, and I've watched it three times since he sent me my copy.
Oh,
so
thank you.
Definitely love it, especially the bonus things that are on there. And call in 646-716-5896. First one that calls right now will definitely get that out to you. And that is autographed by numerous people.
So when you talk about the bonus, I do know we have a small bonus feature down in the basement of the mansion of the bat flying around.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was great, that particular. I love that experience. That was great.
That was hilarious. And I still play that clip to some people sometimes, you know, to make a point when you talk about investigating, being aware of your surroundings.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's
funny.
You could hear our Greg Honorato, one of our investigators, they were like, oh, holy, is that a bat?
And then I was so glad I got it on camera. I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't move too far out of the way. Because I didn't see it when it was happening. We just felt it flying by. That was incredible.
that was a relatively that was an that, and I remember a year and I forgot his name who did the film with you. Him and a couple of our people got locked in the hallway.
Anthony?
Yes, it was Anthony. Yep. Him and I think it was Paul Leskowitz and someone from the Boston group that had come up. And they got locked into a hallway and were yelling over the radio, we're stuck in the hallway, get us out.
Yeah, that was a good investigation. It was fun. It was a lot of fun being up there doing that.
Well, we got these people in the chat room, but I guess none of them know where their telephones are. Cause not...
Well, I tell you what, if you're not able to give it away this show, just give it away the next show that you have. And
I'll
send it to you, Josh, so you can sign it up, and then you guys give it away at your leisure, you know, if it doesn't go away with the show. So whatever you like.
Oh, come on, you check.
Well, we'll play a little clip of Josh from that DVD here just to get people so they know what it is.
There was one machine that was going to point the ghost out to you and take its picture and have a conversation with it. Well, then that's what the piece of equipment we would bring. But there is no magical machine yet, and we don't really know what we're looking for and how to find it. So we're using what equipment is available for us in this day and age to try and find what's unknown.
Uh-huh. Very good, very good. That was a great statement, by the way. That was very good.
Yeah, I pull one out
every
now and
then. I got another great statement here, too.
The purpose of the Malleus Maleficarum was essentially to refute any and all arguments against the reality of witchcraft. The church at the time wanted the people to believe wholeheartedly that there were these evil creatures on the loose that would talk to Satan and steal your children, and that they were alive and present in society, and that they were a danger to everyone.
The Malleus Maleficarum, yeah. That's a fascinating story behind that.
So now you got me thinking with that statement. Now that you've been doing some investigating and stuff, do demons and negative entities really exist, or are they just made up by the church to scare people into following the doctrine?
Let me tell you my personal opinion, and I'm not gonna, you know, everybody's gonna have their own opinions, but my personal opinion is that they were just the product of man. The subject of Satan wasn't even written about in biblical terms until 200 years after the birth of Christ. With 200 years is quite a long stretch. And it was Dante that came up with the whole concept of hell and all of those particular things. It's just the natural characteristic of humans to look at something and take fear from the unknown and give it an evil face. So, personally, I don't think that they are what we think. I'm not saying that there aren't bad things out there. I just don't think that the classic representation of demons and devils are what we're dealing with, personally.
Huh. Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Josh is into, the ghost investigating houses and all that stuff, and like I've explained on other shows, I'm more interested in, like what Sarah Estep was doing in her book Voices of Eternity, where she'd sit down twice a day and actually supposedly contact spirits that have already passed over, that are calling back from heaven, describing to her what it's like over there and what's going on, and telling her that there's a group of deceased scientists over there called Time Stream that are working on a machine to call back here, and letting you know this is the angle that I'm coming in. I'd rather sit in an office, with a recording EVPs and try to make contact with all the way over to heaven, I guess you'd call it, you know.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, as far as I would rather. EVPs are the biggest piece of evidence that I think we have that represents the other side. It's certainly a tremendous mystery. The more I look into it, the more mysterious it happens to get. It, for me, and the research that other people do, there are misunderstandings in EVPs and such, but what I'm looking for is more proof of that there is something on the other side, and EVPs seem to represent that the most.
Yeah, I mean, she was sitting in her office and had a radio tuned to the aircraft band. That's what she used for background noise. And supposedly she was speaking with Beethoven, and she told him to prove it. And all of a sudden there was 1 minute of music that started playing, not on the EVP, but through her radio, which was, like I said, on the aircraft band where no music is. And things like that is what's really intrigued me as far as evidence.
Well, you know, as far as radio waves, I really can't buy voices over radio waves as being EVPs unless it's something ridiculously specific and very, very controlled to represent a certain response. Radio waves by nature are made to gather and carry sound waves from a variety of sources, and they can cross waves. Even, you know, my TV has picked up, you know, when I used to have the old TVs, the old CRT TVs, used to pick up FM radio every now and again. It was a very weird glitch that the thing had. It was a cheap TV. Radio waves can't cross, and they can also carry upon each other. So just because there aren't supposed to be voices on a certain radio wave doesn't mean that there can't be. And so I always, you know, like with Frank's box, things like that, where you have a scanning of radio waves, I really can't lay a lot of credibility into it as of yet.
Yeah, and I
no, she took this this clip of music and sent it to a bunch of experts around the country, and no one had ever heard it before. They couldn't recognize it. They said it was something they'd never heard.
Hmm. An interesting story. That seems to be the case in a lot of things where, you know, people listen to it and they can't, you know, they can't place it. It's something they've never heard. You know, but whether it really is something that is paranormal or just, you know, there's six billion people in the world, I'm sure there's a lot of things that we haven't heard. So I would have to, you know, it's an interesting story, and those types of things that, you know, you put in your file, and unless you have the opportunity to really look into it and find some evidence to back it up, it's like you said earlier, Josh, it's just a story. It's the, you know, it's the fish that got away kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I think I coerced somebody into calling.
Uh-oh.
Who is this, Rose?
Yeah, it is Jem. How are you guys doing?
Very good. How are you?
This is Jem and I, Rose.
Yeah. I'm just now catching the tail end of the show, and I'm so mad that I'm just now, because I'm going to have to grab it off the archive. But what is this? Do you have this DVD available and nobody wants it? What's their problem?
I don't know. That they're all in the chat room, but they got these little snoozy things by their name where they're all just fell asleep or something. And we're giving away this autographed copy of Michael's movie, 14 Degrees, the paranormal documentary. And I've been trying for 5 minutes to get everybody to call in. So you're the first one to call.
I'll take it if you can't pass it off on anybody else. But I'm very
if you can't give it away, I'll take it. Yeah. What
like,
a wise choice. What
they
a
don't,
wise
they don't want to read it? I don't understand why they don't want to view it. That's crazy. But I'm so excited to have stumbled across the show. And like I said, I'm going to call back in and grab it off the archives so I can listen to everything in more detail, because I'm already sucked into it. So
very wise choice, right?
Yeah.
And I believe we're going to be on one of your shows sometime in the future.
Yes, you are, and I'm so stoked about that, too. I can't wait. We're going to get that date and everything all smoothed out and ready to go, but I am very excited. Yeah, well, it was so nice to meet you guys and Mr. Baker, and I'll get off of here so you guys can finish up, but I wanted to say hello, and I'll be grabbing this one off the archive.
All right.
Very good. We appreciate you stopping by.
Hey, no problem. You guys have a great evening. That's the radio show hosting us. We don't want to talk over anybody else, so we all mess up at the same second. That's funny.
Well, I was saying goodbye telepathically, but you couldn't hear me.
I got that one. I did. It was in French, though. It was more like, au revoir.
yes, that's right, yes.
Alrighty, bye guys.
I think I caught it on an EVP.
Oh, God. Speaking of, I've got some stories to tell. Alright, I'm out. Bye, guys.
Bye.
All right.
Oh, we are down to our last few minutes here, Mike. Is there anything you kind of want to plug? You got any appearances coming up you want to kind of hit people up for? Any web pages you want to promote? Anything along those lines?
Well, just the Naropi, N-A-R-O-P-I, .org. If you have a group and it's not registered on there, you can do the search and look for your group. And if not, register up so we can get a nice, accurate database. And this fall, I'm going to be teaching at the Boston Center for Adult Education. I'm going to be teaching a regular course. I'm also going to be teaching at the Brookline Center for Adult Education in November. You'll find it in the catalog. And Newton, Massachusetts Center for Adult Education in September.
Right, you got, I think you have a few more down in Bay State, too, the Bay State Paranormal Center. You got
The rest of the year I'm going to be doing stuff at Bay State, but I guess they're talking about moving everything online to do web seminars, so that will be fantastic. So there's a little transition period that may be happening with that. So
she's booked you like twice as much as she's booked me, so I haven't been there in a couple months.
Yeah, I'm booked up till through December, so at some point it's gonna, whatever's happening, I'm gonna be affected by it, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Mike. It was a great conversation. We filled up an hour pretty quickly there, and I'm sure we could probably go on for another half hour at least. And
I could go in my sleep, you know.
But I got an appointment to go to. It's gonna start really soon. So thank you for coming on. It was a pleasure, and hopefully we'll get you on again sometime.
It was a real pleasure. Good talking with you again, too, Josh. And a nice talking with you, Alan. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much. We'll definitely have to have you back again.
I will send you. I'll be in touch with you, Josh. I'll send you that DVD to send out to your guests there.
All right. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Josh. Thanks, Alan.
Have a good night.
You too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was a good conversation. I like that. That was that went by pretty well. And I think it stuck within our topic of the night.
The one person in the chat room that wasn't sleeping typed in, "I helped film the movie. I don't need another copy." So I don't know. The other ones are in there, but they were. They got all these little Z's by their name. I don't know. They must have fell asleep or something.
Hopefully, I didn't put them to sleep. Oh boy.
But we appreciate Rose stopping by. I seen her in there, and I told her, "Now you call in because no one else has." So I don't know if that's a good sign for us or not.
I don't know. Well, we got all the people listening on the chat room.
Maybe we got to start playing music or something. I don't know.
Music could put them to sleep. I think we're going to start looking towards next week. I kind of teased over it. I wasn't too sure what I really wanted to bring up for next week. And, you know, it's kind of in the front of my mind because I'm working on some projects around it. But, you know, it's a good way to guarantee we won't talk about EVP. Is if we talk about photography. Yeah, because then one really doesn't have a whole lot
good.
To do with the other. I want to challenge us if we can go through a week without bringing up EVP. Because somehow one of us always
ends up
getting it. I don't
know, because photography is going to bring up camcorders, which has audio, so.
Oh, you never know. You're right. I want to see if one of us could not bring it up for real, because it always seems to come up. But, of course, then we're going to always bring up photography
right.
or something.
All right, we got about 30 seconds left here, so
all right,
we're going to talk
about
photography next week.
Photography next week, I'll have a guest for you by Tuesday to have up on the page, and I wanted to put this out real quick. For anybody who's a fan of the Houghton Mansion or the New England Ghost Project or Berkshire Paranormal, we're going to bring back Contact this year, our annual conference. We're going to have it in August on the anniversary of the death of Mary Houghton, so it's going to be worthwhile. Keep listening for that.
All right, that sounds good. And hopefully you can get me the next show after that lined up so I can start promoting a couple weeks out there. That's what I'd like to do anyway. So
I'm trying.
All right, we'll talk to you sometime during the week or next week here. And thank everyone else for joining us. And we'll get out of here and leave you alone. Them two guys in the chat room can go continue sleeping. And we'll be back next week, same time, 5 o'clock Sundays. See everybody later.
Bye. Have a good weekend.